Hello, I'm Kevin Keith. In this episode of Skeptical Ethics, we're going to take a look at a doctrine that gets right to the heart of the relationship between scientific skepticism and morality. That's the well-known principle of noma, or non-overlapping magisteria, which some notable skeptics have offered as a way of diffusing the long-standing tension between science and religion. Before we start, let me remind listeners that Skeptical Ethics is a series that attempts to apply skeptical reasoning to value-based issues such as moral or cultural controversies. New listeners, or those who want to review the basic conceptual grounding of that enterprise, may wish to download Episode 1, Does Skepticism Lead to Agreement?, and Episode 2, Moral Agreement Among Skeptics, for some useful background. Many skeptics will be familiar with the idea of non-overlapping magisteria, a phrase coined by well-respected skeptic Stephen Jay Gould in his book Rocks of Ages to describe a certain position on the relationship between science and religion. In summary, science and religion each comprise a particular magisterium, or area of authoritative knowledge and teaching. Science holds authority in areas of empirical truth about the natural world, and religion holds authority over moral questions. Gould believed that noma was a strict categorization of the methodology, not just subject matter, of science and religion. In Rocks of Ages, Gould asserts, quote, first, that these two domains hold equal worth and necessary status for any complete human life, and second, that they remain logically distinct and fully separate in styles of inquiry, end quote. He also believed that this doctrine established boundaries within which those methods were required to act. He said, quote, noma does challenge certain particular and popular versions of religious belief, even while strongly upholding the general importance of religion, and noma does forbid scientific entry into fields where many arrogant scientists love to walk and yearn to control. End quote. But in describing these different so-called magisteria and defending his claim that they were equal in importance, Gould consistently gave a strangely asymmetrical description of their subjects. His description of science accorded perfectly with the empirical and rational enterprise we all recognize as science, but his descriptions of religion consistently failed to account for and even denied many of the aspects of religion that bring it into most direct conflict with science. In the end, Gould ends up defending the magisterium of religion by reducing religion to something that cannot conflict with science, then declaring that it does not. For instance, he explicitly denies the possibility of miracles, but dismisses the idea that belief in miracles puts religion in conflict with science. Empirical events in the natural world are within the domain of science. Therefore, Gould somehow, strangely, concludes that the fact that many religious people reject science because it does not accept miracles is merely a category mistake and not an actual conflict between the two fields. He also includes lengthy historical anecdotes showing that many religious clergy also practiced natural history, or that some scientists and religious believers felt the two fields were not in conflict. Thus, he concludes, they are not actually in conflict. In this way, he consistently minimizes actual conflicts between scientific belief and organized religion in order to claim that such conflicts have no implications for whether we should recognize an exclusive magisterium for religion. Gould's greatest weakness is his treatment of religion's relevance to morality. He notes that many people acquire moral beliefs from the arbitrary source of religious dogma and rejects that, but he also emphasizes what he views as the inability of science to comment on moral teachings in its own right. He invokes the influential philosophical principle of the distinction between is and ought, the idea that mere facts about the world, the truth about what is, do not dictate conclusions about moral behavior, what one ought to do. For most philosophers, this merely implies that moral principles are distinct from empirical facts, but in Gould's view, this means science is entirely irrelevant and impotent on moral questions. He also falls into the common trap of believing that moral questions are in fact unanswerable. Quote, this inaccessibility to absolute resolution must be viewed as a logical property of the form of discourse itself, end quote. Since there are no answers to moral questions, a simplistic myth that moral philosophers generally don't agree with, moral questions cannot be within the magisterium of any discipline that seeks reliable knowledge, such as science. Gould then dilutes religion to the point of unrecognizability in order to claim for it a scope of authority over intellectual matters not normally regarded as being, in fact, religious. He says that he will, quote, construe as fundamentally religious, literally binding us together, all moral discourse on principles that might activate the ideal of universal fellowship among people, end quote. Thus, what he calls religion is any form of thinking about the issue of human coexistence. In this way, he believes he has proven that morality is the domain of religion by simply applying the word religion to all issues of morality, whether or not such thinking arises from any actual religion. Gould here is guilty of two hasty generalizations. First, that because scientific facts are not moral principles, science cannot comment on moral issues at all. And second, that because science cannot comment on morality, morality must be part of the other magisterium, religion, which he simply defines as virtually anything that's not science. He's wrong on both counts. Here we come to the real problem with Gould's conception of noma. As to the magisterium of science, he correctly endorses standard tenets of natural science, that empirical observation and rational theorizing are the only defensible means to a reliable understanding of the natural world, that miracles are incompatible with the scientific understanding of the world and do not serve to explain anything, and that dogmatic assertions of natural fact are indefensible and almost always false. But in his defense of the magisterium of religion, he brushes away the central beliefs of millions of religious believers that would otherwise show religious claims to be unprovable or ungrounded, including miracles, literal factual readings of statements from religious texts that are at odds with accepted science, and the expressly anti-science outlook of creationists and other religious conservatives. He claims religion has sole authority over questions of morality, but defines morality in such an absurdly broad way that it has nothing to do with religion, while again denying that scientific fact is at all relevant to any of the questions he smuggles in under that definition. In short, he refuses to hold religion to the standards for reliable and authoritative knowledge that he applies to science. This brings us to the general problem regarding the compatibility of science and religion. Gould's noma is a sophisticated attempt to argue for such compatibility, but like earlier attempts, it crashes against the basic reality of the two fields. We know from our experience in this series of podcast segments that the basic tools of scientific skepticism, reliable confirmation of empirical fact and logically valid rational reasoning, are vital to the clarification and to a considerable degree the resolution of many moral controversies. Rationality, bolstered by empirical fact, is an important tool for testing and advancing moral claims. There's no reason to deny this, and there is even less reason to deny the facts of religion itself, simply in order to minimize their conflict with the search for rational and defensible moral beliefs. Although many rational defenders of religion, like Gould, try to dismiss miracles as an irrelevant embarrassment, belief in miracles is central to the dogma of all the major monotheistic religions and many others as well. Getting orders from God in a burning bush, raising the dead, or visiting heaven on a flying donkey are all taken by believers as literally true events and proof of their religious figures' divinity, and therefore as proof of the righteousness of their religious moral teachings. The falsehood of such supernatural beliefs and practices has to weigh against the credence we place in the moral teachings they underlie. Similarly, the irrationality of certain religious moral beliefs, such as the so-called sinfulness of ordinary sex practices or the immorality of eating certain foods, should be relevant to our willingness to credit those as appropriate moral beliefs, and by extension, to credit the religions in which they arise as sources of moral knowledge. Most important of all, the arbitrariness of the moral teachings of most religions is an absolute disqualifier. The claim to moral status of religious teachings, even the ones that make sense on their face, is invariably that they are the commandments of a religious figure. Yet, religious commandments can only be morally right in one of two ways: because God's saying so makes them right, or because those commandments are right independently of God's saying so. Therefore, religious morality must be either merely a matter of God's whim, or not dependent on God in the first place. This is a logical proof that goes at least as far back as Plato, where it's known as Euthyphro's dilemma. It is for this reason that serious moral philosophers seek rational arguments, including empirical facts where relevant, to justify moral claims. And this practice puts morality squarely in the realm of rational humanism, including scientific skepticism. In short, there's an inescapable tension between science and almost all religions, including all the major monotheistic faiths. It is the obvious one of the incompatibility of beliefs based on confirmable empirical observation and rational explanation with those based on ungrounded supernatural beliefs and arbitrary assertion. It does not help to resolve this tension by granting the arbitrary and ungrounded beliefs authority over moral principles and then forbidding science and rationality even to comment on them. For one thing, that division is false and contrived, especially so in the case of Gould's noma. Worse, it betrays one of the most important features of our rational humanity, the opportunity and ability to understand ourselves and our world intelligently and to make informed and rational choices about them. It is much better to acknowledge the incompatibility of religion and science on all areas of rationally grounded knowledge, and to assert and profit from the ability of science and reasoning to help us make headway in most of them. Morality is just one of the most important examples. Thanks for listening. I invite your comments and questions on this issue. Please feel free to contact me through skepticalconnections.com, and I hope you'll join me next week for more of the same.